to discuss the relationship between the vision of the soul and all external impressions that come upon the mind. I described the situation from the way in which the brain acts to some extent as a blockage through the consciousness of the external world, which doesn't permit the soul, which has an awareness that goes beyond space and time, to enter into his life. Except, as we say, there is such a situation both before birth and the concept of intimations for immortality from childhood, experienced by many people, and from before they were born, and also experiences near death. But then I will continue here with this next paragraph. Sometimes there are situations when the partition that separates the soul from the material awareness, that there are cracks in it, like in telepathy, and also sometimes in dreams that turn out to be true. For example, the two friends have the same dream in one night, and they both remember it. And then he connects this with what we saw yesterday, with the description of the Rambam concerning magic. Then he brings here from the Ochot Tzadikim, which is one of the classics of Torah ethics, and the author is not known, but it's a very significant work. But some time ago we discussed with Reb Chaim Kanievsky which is the best ethical work to introduce us to concepts of Musa. He mentioned Ochot Tzadikim. And there he describes that our dreams generally are interwoven with falsehood. Why? Because our thoughts are also a mixture of truth and falsehood. But the sages say that dreams have three characteristics, confirmed also by all more recent investigation of the nature of dreams. One is that Marin lo li adam mehurei libo. One shows a person his subconscious thoughts that don't go above into the consciousness in waking life, but they do come out in dreams. And of course, if we look at the dreams mentioned in the Tanakh, one can see this close connection between what people deep down think about here and there in the daytime, but they don't bring it out in the consciousness, comes out in the dreams. And they say all dreams are intermingled with nonsense, and that's because most of our deeper thinking is an intermingling of truth and falsehood. And the third aspect is a dream contains 1/60th of prophecy. This is the concept that in a dream there is a possibility for the soul to enter to some extent into the mindset of the dreamer. therefore he can span space and time. And at the end of Gemara Brachos, there's quite a long discussion of different aspects of dreams. It's interesting, one of the most brilliant Jewish, I would say, a multi-scientist, he combined in his mind many different sciences, Velikovsky, and many of his books, which also contain predictions of further discoveries, are being more and more appreciated in the progress of discovery. And his first academic work was a student of Freud, and he wrote a parallel between the Freudian concept of dreams and what it said in the Gemara. It's likely that Freud was influenced subconsciously by some of his ancestors who knew the Gemara by heart. So these are the three principles that we do find in dreams. So this is what it says in the Ochos Tzaddikim. Our dreams are generally intermingling of truth and falsehood because that's what goes on in our conscious mind as well. But someone whose conscious thoughts are constantly attached to the truth of Torah, he's dover emet bilvavo, he speaks the truth also deep in his heart, that the truth enters also his emotions and his imagination, then in the dreams he can also often see true things. He says this also applies in every aspect of spiritual life. If a person, he explains something to someone else and it's deep in his heart as being the truth, then those words will also make an impression upon the people he speaks to. And sometimes even if he doesn't speak with them, but just by meeting someone who's got great truth in his heart, he says even the face, one face meeting another face, can frequently come out without speech and without words to create a deep impression. In other words, as we know today also, that there are thought processes that go on in the mind of a person and have a great influence upon his environment. Today, there are quite a lot of people who analyze that the way a person thinks and feels affects his environment to the extent it certainly affects animals who surround him, but some of them even say it affects the plants. A person's got a lot of plants in his living room, and he's angry. It affects the plants. They don't grow in the same way. They start, as it were, dropping down. The leaves, they start to wither. If the person is happy, then the plants also grow in a better manner. And certainly, Rabbi Sroel Salanter used to say, a person who really studies hard the Torah in Eishishik, a place in where they were learning in the Litzen, in India. So the person who has a factory in Warsaw, and his test is, for business, he likes to leave his shop open also when Shabbos comes in, for all the non-Jewish customers who come. But a person who learns hard in one place, it'll influence the person who has his factory and his shops to keep the Shabbos. And it might cause the student in Paris, instead of choosing, as many of the fellow students do, a non-Jewish restaurant where there's no kashrus, he'll choose a kosher one. And that is if a person, conditioned for it, if a person feels that he's connected with the whole of the Jewish people, then his dedication to Torah, and he feels the Torah is that which is the root of the people of Israel, will influence them also. And influence, in fact, the nations of the world. If he clings to the inner world in a strong manner, he nullifies the barriers that divide the spiritual world from the physical world. It's well known also when the Dubna Magid, he was an ethical preacher with great power. And he lived in the time of the Gaon of Vilna. The Gaon of Vilna was a genius. And he knew the whole Torah inside out. And he said, you know, I need to have someone who will give me some ethical rebukes. I've got to become better. Because wherever a person is, he needs Musa. We all need Musa. We all need to constantly work on self-improvement, no matter how much we've achieved. In the example of the Gaon of Vilna, he felt all the time he must raise himself to a higher level. In fact, when he first saw the path of the upright, by the Moshe Chaim Lutzatov, which is a major ethical work, and he had already died, so he said, if he would be alive, I would walk by foot from Vilna to Padua to sit at his feet. He would have done it, like if, when he was young, he did go around European Jewish centers, in part also, to gain instruction from the greatest teachers. So he asked the Dubna Magid, who knew much less than Gaon of Vilna, please give me some ethical instruction. So he said, all right, what can I say? All I can say is that you, the Gaon of Vilna, you're enclosed here in your Beit HaMidrash. You've got a few disciples that you teach, and you study day and night. As well, you just slept four times half-hour naps, with 2 hours total in 24 hours, and a fantastic concentration in his learning. And he had the whole of the Torah literature, certainly the Tanakh, but also the whole of the oral tradition. He knew it all by heart. And much more, he knew the sciences. He had a fantastic mind. So the Dubna Magid said to him, it's very fine, you learning here, but really, you would do even more if you go to Paris. Paris was then the center of culture, where Jews were assimilating and intermarrying fast in his time. The other places were not so much affected yet, but Paris was known. So the Gaon said, well, you're right, but in one way he felt a bit guilty about it. And then the Gaon said to him, nevertheless, I've got to have them in mind, correct. But if I learn with them in mind, and I increase my knowledge of Torah, then the power extends. The power extends even to those on the verge of intermarriage, assimilation, that it might stop them through spiritual powers. So To understand this more deeply, so here Rav Dessler, these in the last lines, he says like this, that a person can have a great influence on others spiritually if his heart is with the others. He feels himself a source through the power of the soul that comes from Hashem, and is able to absorb the Torah of Hashem. And he tried to nullify his external self to the inward experience of the soul, then the quality of din, which means of strict divine judgment, which brings frequently punishments and difficulties upon people, it will become sweetened. But when he does not join his own soul to the soul of the rest of the people, then he remains an individual. And then all the partitions, they go back into their place. And this idea, he says, expressed, if you turn to Bereishis, the passage that deals with Sodom and Gomorrah, the Sodom and Gomorrah were the anti-Chesed society, the people of Sodom were very affluent. The most fertile crescent in the Middle East was the Jordan Valley, culminating what is today the Dead Sea, which is composed, we know, in part also of the terrible catastrophe when all the vegetation and fertility was burnt and was transformed, it says, Gofrit v'melach, srifa kol atza, into sulfur and salt, as is described in the Chumash. And why did this come? So Hashem said, look, you, Avram, I've asked you to come to the land of Canaan to make that the center of loving kindness in the world, to build up Chesed. And Avram was dedicated to spreading the love of Hashem and the love of man amongst all mankind. In fact, he was told at the beginning of chapter 12 that your mission is to bring blessing to all the families of the earth. And how do you bring it? Through teaching them the ways of Hashem. But in that area was, you call it the anti-Chesed society, opposed to loving kindness, with all their evil, combined also with the worst form of sodomic perversions, sexual perversions, immorality, corruption. And if you look in chapter 18, verse 20, so Hashem said, I see the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah, it's terrible. Their sin is so heavy. And why it became so heavy? Because they were destroying everything that Avram was trying to build up. People who were kind were tortured and killed, imprisoned. Therefore, this was a sadistic, evil society. So he decided he must destroy them. But it says then, verse 17, Hashem said, can I hide from Avraham what I'm doing? V'Avraham hayo yelagoy gadol v'yatzum. He's after all going to become a very great and powerful people, and all the nations of the world are going to be blessed through him. And here, there is a cancerous growth of evil right in the area from which the mission of Avraham should become fulfilled. For it says, I have known you, be close to him, because I know he will give a testament to his children, his household after him, to preserve the path of Hashem, which is to do righteousness and justice. And therefore he first said, I must hear what Avraham says about it. And then, as you know, Avraham pleaded with Hashem to save Sodom, to save the whole city. Because the biggest chesed is to do chesed to those who are anti-chesed. But still, you shouldn't go and kill them all. There's some people who are innocent. And then Hashem agreed, if there's a minyan of innocent people, then he'll save the city. Because the ten is also a unit of society. The first time in the Tanakh that the minyan is mentioned is in reference to a minyan of non-Jews. And the last time it's mentioned is also a minyan of non-Jews, because described in Zechariah, the future times of the Mashiach, there'll be a minyan of non-Jews from all the nations coming together really as united nations, not as useless nothings today, as today. But there'll be a minyan, means the concept of as a social group from all the 70 nations, and they'll grasp hold of the corner of the garment of the Jew, and they'll say, you teach us your Torah, because we know God is with you. So here there's a very deep passage in the Zohar. The Zohar, by the way, you should understand, it's a deep midrash, which brings, Zohar means brilliant light. Brings light to this passage. So it says, and Avram is going to become a great and powerful people. So the Torah asks, why is this blessing mentioned here? Is this the reason? It seems to be the reason given that Hashem says, I must reveal what I'm doing to Avram. But surely it's enough if he says, Avram is a saint, all that is going to be, as it says, name was changed after to be the father of the multitude of the nations. So, is it enough to explain this and connect to what was mentioned previously? To say, no, it's something deeper here. It's to make known that even at the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits in judgment over the world, is about to bring punishment, it does not take him away from his quality of compassion. Normally we say the two names of Hashem, Elohim is the Midat HaDin, quality of judgment, and Hashem is the quality of compassion. We'd say sometimes Hashem expresses himself in one way and sometimes in the other way. So therefore, Zohar says that the truth is, even when Hashem brings punishment, then we should know he does not remove himself from his quality of compassion. Ani Hashem lo shaniti. I Hashem, which is the name of the Midat HaChesed of Hashem, I don't change. The change is on account of the recipients, of the way in which human beings behave. It's not from the point of view of Hashem himself. Because we find that even at the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits in judgment over those who need to be punished, he at the same time sits in mercy upon those where he considers it to be right to be compassionate. It's all in 1 second. See, also, he was judging Sodom on account of its evil. At the same time, he had compassion for the chesed of Avraham. He said, Avraham, everyone connected with him, I have to take into consideration. So on this principle, the Zohar brings a question asked by Rabbi Yehuda. Don't we say, Anit v'lechilach Hashem eit ratzon, there's a time of favor and a time of anger. We find in the Tanakh, in a few places, where there seem different moments. We say Bilam had knowledge of the time of anger to be able to curse the people. Sometimes it's Eitratzon. So sometimes it appears, Rabbi Yehuda says, the concept we have of God dealing with men is also changes according to times. Sometimes he listens to prayers and sometimes he does not listen to prayers. Because we have, for example, we have this in the calendar of the Torah. Jadirsh Hashem Motzo, seek Hashem when it can be found, call unto him when he's near. There are times when Hashem is far and times when Hashem is near. Which is the time when he's near? Referred to in this verse. Do any of you know?
Yom Kippur?
Yes. But it's really, they say more than Yom Kippur, it's the 10 days of penitence. Culminate Yom Kippur is the time when Hashem is near, that's the time when we say our slichot and when we feel Hashem is near to us. These are the 10 days between Shon Yom Kippur. These days of Teshuvah. Then Hashem is there, Hashem, with the quality of mercy. So it seems there are two times. There's other times when he's not so near. In fact, the Gemara asks this question also. Gemara asks the contradiction between this verse and another verse in the Chumash where it says, where is there such a people where Hashem listens to them? Whenever we call him, it says, Hashem answers us. It means any day. Hashem is always willing to listen to us. It means there's always mercy. And this verse applies, no, there's times when there's no such strong mercy. So the Torah gives the same answer. It says the difference is between the individual and the community. For the individual, so since his merit is small, even of the great saint, he's just one person. So therefore he needs an Eitratzon to really call out to Hashem. In times when there's din, it's difficult. In time when there's rachamim, that's Eitratzon. He should choose the time of favor to have an answer to his prayers. But the tzibur, the community, they have a great zechut. And Hashem is with them and listens to their prayers even in time of punishment. He listens to them with compassion. When it says, Hein keil kabir v'lo yimas, that God becomes strong in his chesed and does not despise the prayers of the public. And it says the same applies also to different places. So here also, the cities of Sodom compared to the rest of mankind are like a yochid. Means you want to make a distinction between one area and the whole of the world. The whole of the world, Hashem always has compassion upon them. So if this question of a global concern for the future of the world, Hashem is always compassionate. So that's why Hashem, before he speaks to Avraham, he says, Avraham, since he's got the potential to influence the whole world, through him we bless all the nations of the world, therefore he's like the whole world. And therefore I've got to take that into consideration, even though Sodom and Amorah are completely corrupt, and their corruption could spread and do much harm, but I've got to look at Sodom and Amorah from the point of view of the whole of the mankind, the human species. And therefore I've got to have compassion upon the world. And Avraham has the potential to change the whole world. He's called the father of the multitude of nations, because all the nations will be affected by him. And therefore it's fitting the Kodesh Baruch Hu should constantly have compassion because of Avraham, even the time of din, Hashem says, how can we allow this evil to continue with this cruelty? But Abraham is equivalent to the future survival of the human race. And where's this hinted at? And for this, I'd like you to go. This old passage is on page 18 in the Jerusalem Bible. But now, please turn to page 2, Jerusalem Bible. And if you look in chapter 2, verse 4, after the description of creation, including the Shabbat, then it says, these are the generations, means the developments of heaven and earth, bihi bora'am, when they were being created, on the day when Hashem Elohim made the earth and the heavens. Now, do any of you know the first chapter of the Chumash, which name of God is mentioned? Early Elohim. And here, which is, if you look at the Jerusalem Bible, you've got the Jewish division of chapters, starts with this verse, verse 4, of the general division. The general chapter division of the Bible is of non-Jewish origin. It's demonstrated in the way in which they start the second chapter of the Chumash with the Shabbat. So they make a separation between Yom HaShishi, the sixth day, and between the Shabbat. This is introduced by a Christian scholar in the 10th century. And the first printers of the Bible were Christians, so they followed his chapter division. And it's characteristic of the difference between the Torah and Christianity, or at least as Christianity has developed in some ways. They divide between Yom HaShishi, the sixth day, and the seventh day is separated, because give to God what belongs to God, and give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. So the weekday can be dedicated to mundane activities, and the Shabbat is the holy day. But we, when we make Kiddush, how do we start the Kiddush Friday night? Yom HaShishi, and then Vayichulu. We join together the last verse of chapter 1 with the first verse of chapter 2, not to make a separation between the Shabbat and the weekday. Because although we say Mavdil ben Kodesh L'chol, ben Yom Shvil, Sheshit Yemei Amaseh, we do make in the Kiddush, we describe even the separation at the end of the Shabbat. But we say the concept of the separation is to allow the holiness of the Shabbat to enter into the week. So we have to add from the weekday to the Shabbat. That's the concept of Tosefet. Okay. Please come in. We'll have to stop now.